Hey guys, this is Drew Schmidt from The Random Anything, and you're listening to The Infinite Rabbit Hole. Yeah, I've been listening to you guys for a while now. I got exposed to you guys from Asher's from Wednesday We Talk Weird. Keep up the great work. Love it.
Welcome back to the Infinite Rabbit Hole. I'm your host, Wes, here to lead you on our journey where we delve into the legends of the deep, which will hopefully be the beginning of a new series for us covering many different creatures of the ocean that have roots based in stories of old, and some even based in science and fact. Today, we are covering the legend of the mighty Kraken, which may be one of the most famous and well-known out of all the tales that originated at sea. Today we have with us Jacob. How you doing today?
My back hurts, but I'm here and I'm ready to hear about the Kraken and hear what you see what you cover. I know Jeremy and I kind of got into the Kraken when we were talking about the Bermuda Triangle a little bit, but like their version of the Kraken. So I'm stoked to see what else there is.
There's a lot, and also at the same time not a lot, if that makes sense. It was a lot to go through, to be honest. But as next, we have Jeff. Jeff, man.
Yo. What up?
How are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. Actually, just took a shot of Kraken prior to this, not even knowing that you were doing the Kraken.
That happens to be what I'm sipping on at the moment as well.
Ooh, I might have to skedaddle out of here while you're doing one of these paragraphs and grab me one real quick. But yes, I'm good. I'm ready. Let's go, Kraken.
Hell yes. And last but certainly not least, we have Kenzar. How are you doing today?
I'm pretty good, actually. How about you, Wes?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm tired.
Good to hear.
But I'm feeling good. I'm ready to talk about this.
That's good. I'm excited. I like Kraken.
Yes. Yeah, Kraken, the creature and the liqueur is two of my favorite things.
I want to feel included. I'm drinking a monster, which some would consider the Kraken to be a monster. So there we go.
Very, very true.
I'm not a drinker, but I got a ghost cup.
Oh, there you go.
It's about as close to
cheers to that.
Close to crazy things.
I like that you have the picture behind you right now.
Oh, Wes, yeah.
How are you doing this on this program?
I tried to do it last episode we recorded. Excuse me. I got a new webcam. I got an Elgato face cam, I think it's called. And the software that can be used with it called Camera Hub has an option where you can add backgrounds. So I can have this, or I can do our logo, but for some reason it looks like it's backwards.
It looks regular to us.
Oh, is it? Oh, to me, it looks like it's backwards for whatever reason. Got an OG.
So this is why you trimmed the beard and shaved that. You got a new webcam. And you know, I got to make sure I look real fresh. Real
fancy.
For them ladies. All right.
Real fresh.
Fresh for the ladies.
Them YouTube ladies.
Fresh for all them Bigfoot out there watching. So, yes, we are covering the Kraken. And, you know, for me, the ocean has always been something that's held a special place in my heart. You know, growing up in Florida, right next to the ocean, I mean, I was literally within walking distance of the beach. And then, you know, once I graduated high school and joined the Navy, you know, going on deployment, like, I loved being out to sea. And it's still one of my fondest memories of my time in the Navy. And, it's always fascinated me wondering what all may be just below the surface, you know, because there's still a ton that we don't know about the oceans and what's still down there, you know, waiting to be discovered. How do you guys feel about the ocean as a whole?
Dude, so I have this theory. I'm sure it's not my theory, but, you know, I feel like there's probably a super advanced civilization down there. You know, giant machines and...
Like in the Abyss?
Yeah.
Yes. The Abyss is a documentary.
There's got to be, or it's at least got to be like an entrance into the Hollow Earth or something down, you know, down in the depths. But yeah, there's probably all kinds of crazy shit down there.
Yeah. The Abyss is one of my all-time favorite movies. I love that movie. So good.
Abyss.
Yes.
I mean, so... There used to be the legends of, like, the giant squid, right? And then, what, like, 20 years ago, they found that there actually is a giant squid, like a... I forgot how big the thing was, but it was discovered a new type of squid that's apparently the biggest dang squid they've ever seen there, you know, in history. And, I mean, if something like that can just go undocumented for so long with stories and legends to back it up, then I can't see why there wouldn't be the Kraken. Or, you know, the Kraken is a very wide term for many different types of sea creatures, depending on, you know, location and where it's at. It's kind of all summed up into the Kraken, right? And that's popularized through, Clash of the Titans. And then there was... The Pirates of the Caribbean franchise, they had the Kraken and stuff, and they both look different. And, but honestly, if there's something as big as the giant squid and blue whales and all kinds of stuff, and those are at a level that we can get to, then I don't know, you know, the Marianas Trench is gigantic and it's super deep, but I've heard that it's not the deepest trench that's in the ocean, or it could not be that it's just the deepest discovered trench in the ocean. So what is truly down there, right? I think we've discovered 5% of the ocean and the animals in it. So sure. I mean, why not? Why couldn't there be, you know, maybe it, you know, maybe, or that they were at one point, right? That there was some sort of a fact behind all the myths and legends. So yeah, it doesn't bother me one bit to think about it. I personally don't like the ocean because I like to be able to see what's underneath me when I'm swimming. So like swimming in Florida wasn't bad because, you know, you could see 100 feet away from you. But generally speaking, you know, especially here on the West Coast, it's really dirty water, so you can't really see underneath you. So it's just like, ugh, nope, I'm good.
Okay. So it's not that you don't like the ocean, it's that you don't like knowing what's in the ocean.
No, I just don't like the mystery of what's around me, and not necessarily even like sharks. Like, I don't want to step on a broken piece of glass when I'm going up to the shore, you know, something like that. It's just all kinds of stuff. I don't want to step on a dirty needle, you know, because I'm in California. It's just, you know, whatever it may be. I just like to be able to see. And so for that reason, I don't, you know, really go in there very much. Except for when I was in the Bahamas. I did some snorkeling there, and it was pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's beautiful down there for sure. Crystal clear water.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing.
Yeah, that's why I like, I don't necessarily swim in them because they're really cold, but the most of the rivers and some of the lakes up here are like crystal clear. So that's why I like swimming in the lakes, because for the most part, I can see what's underneath me. The ocean, to me, I love the ocean. I'm from Alberta where there's just lakes, barely any lakes. So when I moved to the West Coast and I had the ocean in my backyard, I thought it was the coolest thing. And the ocean out here is gross. I don't want to go anywhere near it. I just like looking at it. The deeper the water, the more afraid of it I am. But I am so fascinated by what's going on in the ocean. Like Jake said, I think it's only like 5-7% of the ocean that's actually been discovered. And it covers 70% of our planet. That is an incredible stat to me, and it just blows my mind. And the ocean is so fascinating but so terrifying all at the same time, because it's just so unknown.
Well, you guys have, like, off your coastline, are you in like Western Canada?
Yep.
So you have Caddy off the shores, and in the lakes you have the Ogopogo. So either way, you know, if you can't see what's around you, you're going to get eaten by a Nessie-like monster.
Oh, totally.
Right?
Totally. I want, like I said, I don't want to go anywhere near it. I just like to look at it. I'll walk down the pier, and I'll stand on the pier, and I'll watch the fish in the water, but that's about as far as I'll go.
Yeah. Ever since I was a kid, like going into the ocean or even any large body of water, like if I'm ever at a point where like I look down and like I'm in water deep enough that I can't see the bottom, that like gives me the heebie-jeebies, you know. Mm-hmm. Like I just, like, you know, it's a massive pucker factor going on, you know, times 10. You know, and you know, it's not necessarily related to the Kraken, but you know, having seen Jaws as a kid, you know, like I just had that irrational fear that, you know, there's something that is going to like grab me or whatever, you know.
You want to know what it was for me? Stingrays. Because I was like, I think 10 or 11 was when Steve Irwin died, and I thought he was the coolest guy ever, and then a stingray killed him, and I was like, nope, I'm out. The ocean is not for me. And at that point, I had never seen the ocean before in my life. So
I was literally just thinking the same thing, that and jellyfish. Because I've been stung by a few jellyfish, and it's like, you know, they weren't terrible. It wasn't like a hospital trip or anything like that, you know, but it was still sucked, you know, and I couldn't see it until it was on me and tangled up, you know. I'm just like, this is garbage. But
Turns out stingrays are really cool, just by the way.
Apparently,
I have one as
too.
A tattoo.
I mean, I'm growing up in Florida, I'm sure Jeff can back me up on this, but like in Daytona, we had a jellyfish season and we had a shark season. We called it more like a shark week, but like jellyfish season, literally the beaches are just completely covered in jellyfish that wash ashore and whatnot. And there's just like, they're everywhere in the water. You can't like go in the water without touching one, you know? And I've been in the water, you know, like surfing or just hanging out at the beach and like had it, you know, I think the worst was I got stung by like 4 jellyfish at once one time. And it was like you said, it's not like the worst thing. Like I didn't need to go to the hospital or nothing, but it's just very uncomfortable. And it's just a very irritating pain that like takes a long time to fade.
It's like a bee sting. It pulsates and it doesn't feel good, but it's not like, oh no, I'm dying. But it's like, man, I really wish I hadn't have had that happen.
You
got pee on it.
And I'm all out of pee when it happens, you know.
It's just how it works, you know.
I'm here to pee and get stung by jellyfish, and I'm all out of pee. also, you know growing up surfing, there was times like shark, like what we called shark week, was sharks would follow, you know, the fish that they eat into like knee deep water, you know, during certain times of the year. So you could literally be in knee deep, waist deep water, and there'd be sharks in the water. And I've literally been like, just like waist deep water, felt something brush up against my leg. I looked down
and I see, you know, the tail of a shark swimming away, and I'm just like, oh, awesome. Cool. All right.
Okay, that would be super cool to me, though. Sharks don't scare me like they do most people.
I mean, they kind of freak me out, but, like, I don't know. It's more the idea of what they could do rather than what when I actually see one.
Oh, yeah. Don't get me wrong. I'd be nervous, but, like, that would be pretty kind of cool, personally. Yeah, I
just ate fresh-caught shark the other day.
Hell yeah.
My cousin went fishing 5 minutes from here and caught a bonnethead shark, and we fried it up. Delicious.
Yeah, I've been trying to catch a leopard shark down here in SoCal. That's my goal before we leave this area, is to get a leopard shark. Anything over 3 feet and you can take it home with you. And I just got tipped off on the where to do it and what bait to use, that I've been doing it in the wrong spot with the wrong bait. And I was like, oh. they're like, you're over there. You're over here, right? I'm like, yeah. And they're like, what bait are you using? I was like mackerel, I think. And he's just like, oh, yeah. He's like, you are in like the prime area for leopard sharks. You need to start using shrimp. He's like, I don't care. Go to the grocery store, get some raw shrimp, throw it on your hook and huck it out there. And I guarantee you, snatch one in like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, I've spent hours, days.
Yeah. My dad and our neighbors on the street we lived on used to go fishing all the time on the jetty down at Ponce Inlet in Florida. And they would catch shark all the time. Shovelhead, I think they even caught like a small hammerhead one time.
Mm-hmm.
I forget what other sharks there are, but I mean, typically they're only like 3 feet or so, you know, the ones that I've seen in the water that brush up against my leg, no more than 3, maybe 4 feet, you know,
right.
Not enough to like give you a life threatening injury, but enough to deal some decent damage, you
nibble
know?
Some toes.
Yeah. But you know, most shark don't care for the taste of our meat, you know, they'll bite thinking we're something else and then realize, oh no, I don't like you, let go. And then go on their way, you know. So there's at least that kind of peace of mind in a way.
You're not going to get eaten, but you'll bleed to death. Depending.
Yeah.
Ah, solace. Yes, thank you. Thanks.
You don't have to worry about like going down the gullet, you know, drowning in a shark's mouth or some shit, you know. That was an irrational fear of mine as a kid. So.
Mm.
Food for thought.
I was afraid of the shark that was in the pool. It was only in the pool, dude. When nobody else was around. It was just me in the pool.
I'm literally so glad you said that, because I had that. I wasn't going to bring it up because it sounds so dumb, you know? But like, you're in the pool by yourself, and then I don't know, in my mind,
Dun,
you know,
and I'm just like, I'm out.
You know the first Ace Ventura movie where he falls inside the tank because he thinks, you know, Snowflake is in the tank, and the shark grabs and starts dragging him around. So my dad, I mean, grew up on that sort of comedy and stuff, you know, Monty Python, all those really funny movies, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, that was a classic in the Owens household. And my parents had a swimming pool in their backyard, and they also showed us Jaws when we were like 8, right? So, we go night swimming because in Fresno, California, it's, you know, middle of summer, it's 110 outside at night, right? So we're doing some night swimming or whatever, and or maybe like 100 or 90 or something, but it's still hot. But my dad will sit there, like when we were kids, like he'd be like, dun, 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 dun. And we can't see anything. It's pitch black outside. And then he goes down and grabs our legs and just starts dragging us around the pool and stuff. And it was all fun and stuff. But yeah, when no one else was around, there was absolutely a shark in there. Like 100%. And I'm like, thanks.
Yeah. I mean, talk about, you know, movies that scarred kids for life. My parents took me to see Arachnophobia at a drive-in theater when I was like, I don't know.
Candy.
I had been like 6 or 7 or something, and I am terrified of spiders to this day. I can't deal with it. Like, it's, I gotta get my
Candyman
wife.
Man, fucked me up. I gotta shut the bathroom door.
I have this weird irrational fear of plants and water in general. It doesn't matter what kind of body of water it is. If there's like, I just generalize it all as seaweed, but yeah, like if I can see the plant in the water, I'm out. I'm not getting in that water. I don't know what it was exactly, but I was like an 8-year-old kid and I watched this show. It was one of those Teletoon late at night horror shows. And it was like a cartoon of a chick going swimming and then getting grabbed by a piece of seaweed and dragged down. And I was like, that is the end of swimming in water with plants. I'm not getting dragged down into the water by seaweed.
I mean,
in hindsight, it's ridiculous, but
yeah,
it's a legit fear I have.
For me, it was the original Blob movie. There's a scene. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's like the 70s, but there's a scene where this guy, he's like looking over a big old kitchen sink, like in a like a restaurant kitchen, right? Big old giant sink. And he can hear something inside the drain. So he's like looking over it. And then this big old pink blob monster grabs his face and pulls him into it. And you can see like the pipe underneath expanding and blood spraying out of it and stuff. I watched that movie when I was like 10. And I was scared to take a shower for years. Like, my goodness. Our parents. Oh, and you know what? I'm more than likely going to do the exact same thing to my kids. Because it's just,
and the
you
cycle
know,
continues.
The cycle continues. <That's right. laughs> Can't go with your whole childhood and not be scared. What is this?
Yeah.
I want to hear about the Kraken now.
Yeah.
So,
let's get back to the Kraken. So I want to ask you guys, in your mind, like when you think of the Kraken, what do you picture in your mind? Like what does a Kraken represent?
Or serpent,
like, idea of it.
Giant serpent being, yeah.
Like a world like a, serpent?
Like a water dragon, bro. Like I think of
Hydra.
Like a Chinese depiction of a dragon. You know, like they're like long with the legs and all the other things, but they're like serpent. That's kind of what I think of.
Okay.
The image I conjure up in my head is a giant squid. But the whole idea of the Kraken to me, every time I hear Kraken, I just think of death. Honestly.
It's fair.
Nice. Well, actually, I go straight to the life of me, I can't remember what the name of it was, but the Bahama version, which is the shark with the tentacles for legs.
So I have it written down somewhere.
But it's
Luska.
Yeah, that's it. The Luska. Or Lusco. Or something like that. Yeah. That's what I think about. If I had to rationalize it, it could just be a massive shark that was eating an octopus or a squid, and it was seen by somebody, and they just put two and two together out of fear, you know, mind playing tricks, and be like, it was a shark head with tentacle arms or whatever. But yeah, that's what I think about. Something crazy, something that probably doesn't exist, but you know, well, why not?
Well, I mean, a lot of things that, you know, there's old tales about, there's usually some truth in them in some form or fashion. You know, and we'll get into that with the Kraken for sure. But, you know, sea monsters have played a prominent role in myths and legends of most seafaring cultures on Earth. And with such inspiring ocean biodiversity, it's not difficult to see why. And there's probably no legendary sea monster as horrifying as the Kraken. According to stories, this huge, many-armed creature could reach as high as the top of a sailing ship's main mast. And a Kraken would attack a ship by wrapping their arms around the hull and capsizing it. The crew would either drown or be eaten by the monster. And what's amazing about the stories is that of all the sea monster tales, you know, that we have, there's the Kraken has the best evidence that it was based on something real. But before we get into that, let's talk about the origin of these tales. So if any of you had to guess, you know, where the Kraken originally originated, what would you guess? Out of curiosity.
Atlantis.
Yeah.
Atlantis.
What?
If it came from Atlantis, how do we know about it to this day?
We know a lot of stuff from Atlantis. That's a different episode.
Tune in next week. What about you, Kenzar?
Honestly, I for whatever reason I feel like it's like a Japanese story or some sort of Asian type story, Asian culture mm-hmm. type story. They always seem to have some really cool stories. So,
okay. You know, for me, I've never really honestly thought about it. I just remember, you know, reading about it or whatever in books when I was a kid and whatnot, or seeing it in movies, you know, like Pirates of the Caribbean, which was an awesome depiction in my mind of what a Kraken was. But when I found out where it originally, you know, originated from, I was honestly blown away, because it originates in Scandinavian folklore, which is pretty badass in my opinion. You know,
Interesting.
I think, you know, Norse mythology and all that is pretty epic. But it was first mentioned in a manuscript written in the year 1180. And it was written by a Norwegian king named King Sverre. I'm going to go ahead and apologize to the listeners now, because there's a good chance that I'm going to butcher the hell at a lot of these names and words, because, you know, I don't speak that language or anything like that. So I'll go ahead and apologize up front for any of the mispronunciations. But it was written in this manuscript, and then it was also mentioned again in an Icelandic hero saga called the Orvar Odar. Again, probably pronouncing it wrong, but that dated all the way back to the 13th century. And in that saga, it was given the name Hafgufa, which roughly translates to either sea reek or sea steamer, due to it using its own vomit as chumming bait to attract prey fish. You know, it was told that they would see, you know, the ocean steaming, you know, is it like they didn't know what it was at the time. It's believed that it was vomiting up whatever, chumming the waters to draw in its prey, and then, you know, eating them. And it was even depicted as consuming whales, ships, and men in this tale. But there's also another creature. I'm not going to get too much into it, but there was a second creature that was of equal size, roughly, but was depicted as something completely different from the Kraken, or Hafgufa, however you want to pronounce that. But it was called the Lyngbakur, which translates to heatherback. And, you know, when I first read that, I was like, what the hell is heather? apparently that's a low growing evergreen shrub. But according to the saga, the Lyngbakur would bait seafarers by posing as a heather covered island. And when a crew landed on its back, it would sink into the sea, drowning the crew. But getting back to the Hafgufa, or however you pronounce that, in the saga, it was said that this creature was so large that a ship could sail through its open jaws, which appeared to be nothing more than rocks. And these tales sound fantastical and are truly entertaining, but, you know, what could have inspired these tales? Could it have been a real live in the flesh creature? Well, hopefully, you know, we can provide some insight to that in this episode. Now, the Kraken is usually depicted as an aggressive cephalopod-like creature. And for those wondering what a cephalopod is, it's either like a squid or octopus, invertebrate sea creature. And perhaps the largest monster ever imagined by mankind, capable of destroying entire ships and dragging sailors to the doom. The exact description varies from story to story, storyteller to storyteller, and the details such as the number of tentacles and the color of its skin often change, but there are always a few things that remain a constant in these tales. One, it's a giant monster. Two, it has a huge, terrifying mouth. Three, it lives in the sea. And four, it comes out from the depths to destroy ships and eat unsuspecting sailors. And these tales, they don't end in Norse mythology. There are many cultures around the world that have a myth or legend about a tentacled sea monster as large as an island, capable of engulfing and sinking any ship. From ancient Greece, where Aristotle, who lived in the 4th century BC, described a large squid, which he called Toothus, distinguishing it from the smaller squid, I guess, that they knew about, called Toothus. Or instead of I don't know how to pronounce this. I probably should have looked that up again before the start of the episode, but it's a different spelling, but it seems the same to me. But there's also Pliny the Elder, who, living in the 1st century AD, describe the gigantic squid in his natural history, with the head as big as a cask, arms 30 feet long, and carcass weighing 700 pounds. Of course, they didn't have pounds and feet back then, but, you know, roughly translated from these tales, that's what they would equate to. And then there was the creatures called Scylla and Charybdis that Homer wrote about in the Odyssey, which, you know, that's a Greek tale. And then there, like Jake was talking about earlier, the Lusca in the Caribbean. And in Japan, they even have their own version that's called the Akoramoi. I want to say that's how it's pronounced. And then there's even another version in New Zealand, which I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce this. you know, I'll give it a shot, but I'm guessing Teweke Muturorangi. Apologizing to any New Zealanders out there that may be listening, but you know. But let us
know how to actually say that if that's the case. Yeah,
for real.
Please.
But I find it fascinating that all these different cultures around the world have similar descriptions of this creature, but these cultures didn't have a connection with one another at the time. You know, how is it that these different cultures around the world have such a similar description of this creature? You know, could it be that they are all seeing the same animal, the same creature? It's hard to say, but I think that the most logical answer would be that they're seeing the same animal.
I think so.
Yeah,
I mean, everything in our society has that same kind of thing to it, where, I mean, freaking agriculture pops up around the world when these people can't, well, as far as we know, they weren't connected or sailing mm-hmm. across the oceans, although that might not be the case. But yeah, I think that I think all these beings existed on some level, like giants or cryptids, you know, the Kraken, whatever it is, it definitely existed, in my opinion, way before like the last ice age. Or during the last, actually. Remember they were talking mm-hmm. about the Box Saga and that whole area of land that wasn't affected, like who, maybe in there. I don't know. But it makes sense that those stories would carry on and then be spread around the world by whatever ancient civilization that, you know, gave us all the math and the things, you know?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think the most logical thing is that they're all seeing the same creature. They just, you know, through tellings of, you know, word of mouth, you know, over how many years, hundreds, you know, tens, 20, 30, 50, 100 years, you know, thousands of years, you know, they talk about these tales of seeing these creatures. And over time, you know, things get exaggerated. You know, it's just a giant game of telephone. You know, oh, did you hear about what these sailors said they saw, you know, things like that. And it just ended up growing into, you know, these epic myths and legends that we now know today. I mean, I love it. I think it's awesome. But I like to think that there is a lot of truth to it as well. You know, that's my favorite part about it, is that they're based in truth, you know, or some truth at least.
I think that it's more likely that they all saw the same thing, that it was just a global phenomenon or a global animal that just didn't really, maybe it had I don't know, if we like lined up all the countries and stuff and we kind of like made a line across the globe, Jeff, maybe we could see, maybe we could see like a clear, I don't know, migration pattern or something like that, right? Like we mm-hmm. see with some other creatures where they go from north to south or whatever, right? And then along with maybe not exaggerating through oral tradition, but maybe more along the lines of, you know, there's things that are obvious mythologies and things that could very well have been real or still are real, and maybe along the lines of the mythologies of the different areas and their own various legends, like, you know, the legends of the Greek gods versus, you know, legends to the same degree in Asian countries, right? It's just like, so they had their own separate thing going on, and maybe that inspired that change more so than just a game of telephone. Maybe it was more so like incorporating these creatures into their own, you know, versions of legend and mythology that kind of gave it a more larger than life sort of aspect to it. And also Scandinavia, which covers Sweden, Denmark, and Norway, covers about 1% of our listener base, and we just probably lost all of them. Thank you, Wes.
Way to go, Wes.
Or we may have gained more. I mean, hopefully, like, fingers
this
crossed.
Idiot's trying. No,
I'm trying.
Yeah. And what's also interesting is that that area is also where the area was they were talking about in the Bach saga, that might be that ancient land, you know, is that because they said Helsinki was the North Pole. So that, that area is the area. So if that's where the stories originate, maybe there's some truth to the Bach saga, and that this ancient culture who saw these things, you know, somehow survived 100,000 years worth of cataclysms in, you know, in that area.
Yeah. I mean, I like to think that, you know, back during these times, you know, a lot of people think that they know enough about the world that, you know, I don't know. They think they know everything there is to know, maybe, you know, and then all of a sudden they see this creature that is unlike anything any man, woman has ever seen ever in their life. You know, it's going to be revered, you know, it's going to be almost like a maybe almost like a godlike figure in their life from that point forward. You know, all of a sudden this thing appears, and then just as quickly as it, you know, appears, it disappears or whatever. You know, I think it's fair to say that, you know, it just becomes a part of that culture from then on, you know, and that's maybe why these tales grew from, you know, initially seeing these creatures to what they are now, you know. And also they talk about how it is able to drag a ship down, you know, or capsize an entire ship. How big were ships back then? You know, not like what we have today.
Depending on the location, you know, if you were in like a, I don't know, in England, like in the medieval time frame, you might get, actually no, like more later on into like the colonial time frame is when you actually got like the big ships with the massive mass and all that stuff. But a lot of northern European countries actually utilized ships that were just like the Viking longboats, like the French, the English, the Picts, you know, the obviously the Vikings, you know, all in that area, they all used the longboat style ships, which weren't very big, you know, could carry, I don't know what, like maybe 50 people, you know, not very tall mass and stuff. So really, if you compared it to today, you'd say it was a large boat, right? A large sailboat, not a ship, which they would have considered a ship. But for us, it'd be like, I don't know, a ship is like, you know, a yacht or a, you know, an aircraft carrier or something like that, you know, a floating city versus back then, which it was just a vessel that could carry multiple people, you know, and maybe bigger than a dinghy.
You know, that's, right? That's not even something that I ever thought about either. So like, you just flipped this whole thing upside down for me already. Like, I'm totally looking at this in a whole new light. The ships back then were a whole lot smaller than they are now. So the creature, the Kraken, probably wasn't nearly as big as it seems now. Probably a creature that's a lot smaller than what the story portrays.
Possibly. I mean, but spoiler alert, from what we know now of giant squid, which, you know, it's most likely what these sailors of old saw, you know, they can grow up. They've been measured up to 46 feet long, you know, at least the carcasses that they found, you know. And it's believed that there's some that could have reached up lengths of up to 60 feet, you know. And that compared to those ships of that time, that's big enough to wrap an entire ship, you know, with its tentacles and whatnot.
Oh, and heck yeah.
It's, I mean, I can't imagine. I mean, if you've ever seen the movie Master and Commander, I love that movie. Mm-hmm. Great, great movie. But like, imagining back then when they had ships of that size, I couldn't imagine being a sailor back then. You know, there's so much unknown about the ocean and the world as a whole, you know, and it's just you and your crew and just doing whatever it takes to survive. And then, you know, if back in those times of Vikings and whatnot, you know, if you're on these smaller ships and you're out, you know, in the middle of the sea and one of these creatures came up and it's as big or bigger than your current longboat, you know, I can't imagine what I'd be thinking, you know, at that time. Like, I'd be terrified.
Dude, what a like magical era of humanity, man. People, when they didn't really understand things and like everything had like a deep purpose or a meaning, or like there was some deity attached to it, you know, like there was something, there's something about that that's very like, I don't even know the word. What was the first word I used? Do you guys remember? I don't even remember.
Magical.
Magical. Yeah, that's it, man. You know what I mean? Like, does that make sense?
And yeah, it's like, dude, no, 100%,
regardless of like the gods that these ancients talked about that they saw or whatever, regardless if that's real or not, their experience with that is super real. Like when the thunder would strike and they'd be like, that's Thor, you know, it's like they really believe that. So whether it's true or not, the experience for them is still as it's if real. It's true. And it's just like, it's wild, dude.
Yeah. You know, like that's kind of like the where I was going with it is, you know, they're still learning about the world. They're exploring, you know, there's no one person that has seen everything there is to see, you know, far from it, no, extremely little. And to see something like this, you would have to imagine that it was a sign of some sort, like you're meant to see it, you know? And that's why I was saying like, it became some revered creature, you know, that it became a part of their culture, you know, from then on, and then became this fantastical, mythical creature, you know, to their culture. And I think, you know, it's exactly how you describe it. It's something magical, you know, and I like to think that things that we don't understand is magic, you know, to us. I like that. I like to think that there's still things like that out there waiting for us to figure out.
Just for comparison for the listeners. So I just did a quick Google search. Didn't get to page 3 on this one, but next time. The average Viking longboat was between 45 and 75 feet long and generally held about 50 people and sometimes could hold more than 100, depending on the amount of, well, availability of space, right? Today, the average multi-hull sailboats are between 40 and 45 feet. So basically, you know, what we would consider today as a sailboat is what they considered to be a substantial size ship that they could actually transport a good amount of people in. So, yeah, so definitely, you know, I think that if we are talking about something that, you know, an animal that's 45 feet long and maybe could get bigger, then this absolutely could have been, you know, where this story originated. And I agree that that it was like before scientists could come and spoil all the fun, you know, science has to come and butt its way up in there and be like, oh, well, actually this is a mollusk and blah, 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 blah. And be like, you know what? Shut up. You know, I want to think that this is some like crazy sea creature that could eat you in your sleep at any time, you know, snatch you up out of a window or something like that. And you get these kids to bed. Yeah, it's just what a cool time frame for discovery and figuring stuff out, how to traverse the oceans in a longboat, you know, how to identify things and how to pass along information. And, you know, and maybe there was some flubbing of the numbers and stuff when it came to, you know, the if this was Scandinavian, you know, legend, or so they say. I mean, those people were all over the place, you know, conquering different areas and, you know, very mm-hmm. well could have made it all the way into what's now currently the United States. So, I mean, they were like all over the place. They're trading with other cultures. They were invading. So say, you know, one of these raiding parties that lasts a year, and right at the beginning of their trip, like a month in, they see one of these things. And then on the very back end of it is when they're relaying the information that they saw one to their loved ones when they return. You know, how much could the length and the size change in a year of just trying to remember, or, you know, reliving that moment of the capsized ship or whatever it was? You know, maybe even if the ship was just destroyed in a storm and the dead bodies were being cleaned up by one of these things, you know, who knows? But, you know, that relaying of information. So, yeah, I mean, it's entirely possible that they were real or are real, and, you know, the numbers could have been flubbed, or it could very well have been there were massive squids that would attack these vessels. Because what mm-hmm. the heck do we know? You know, we're not going across the ocean in a vessel that big anymore. Some people do sometimes, where they're like, I'm going to sail around the world. You know, those crazy folk. But generally speaking, if we're going across the ocean, it's in a container ship, a cruise ship, an aircraft carrier, some kind of metal vessel. We're not doing it in a wooden boat.
Well, some people do. But those, yeah. Well, those that's people the are a different breed. Yeah. I mean, they're much, much braver than me. And the people of this,
oh, definitely. You know,
this time period, I mean, man, I can't even imagine just like, you know, the open ocean, and you're just like, I'm just going this direction to see what I find, you know, mm-hmm. and not knowing what waits for you out there. And that's just like mind-blowing.
Not only that, not only not knowing what's out there for you, but thinking that there's something out there for you. Like,
oh, yeah.
Thinking that Medusa's out there somewhere, thinking that mm-hmm. the Kraken's out there somewhere. You know what I mean? Like, and they believed it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's an excellent point.
Start trading with the Greeks and hear about the harpies and be like, the what now?
Yeah, people trying to find a mermaid.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, we would consider it crazy now in modern times, civilized times. But I mean, that's just what they did. And, you know, honestly, I think, you know, the human race as a whole is all the better for it, that there is those who are willing to just, you know, venture into the unknown.
For sure.
It's amazing.
Most of us wouldn't exist if that hadn't happened. If we all just kind of stayed in our tribes or our groups and never really spread out anywhere, most of us wouldn't exist, because most mm-hmm. of us are combinations. I've only met a few people in my entire life that were like pure blood from like the area where they were from originally, like 100% Irish, you know, or something like that. Most people are a combination of a lot of different, you know, genetics and things like that from all over the place. So a lot of us wouldn't exist if that was the case.
I would even venture to say that in this current day and age, that it's a percentage of 1% of, you know, of people that are pure, if at all, mm-hmm. You know,
I'd say probably lower.
I mean, yeah, I mean, that's what I meant. Like, if at all, like I think it'd be fair to say that there probably isn't any pure blood or whatever, quote unquote.
We're all mud bloods.
yeah. You know, we're all the better for it as a, you know.
Except for Jeff, he's an alien.
I'm actually Nigerian.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, you're not kidding.
No, I'm not kidding. I got DNA results.
I remember when he brought this up on his show, Shadow Band. He makes it a really big point. And I think it's great, actually.
How many percent?
Like one.
That's enough. That's more than zero.
I was thinking about making shirts.
What would they say?
I don't know. I'm Nigerian. Yeah. Something like that.
Interesting fact. I was actually, I'm pretty sure that I was filled a quota when I went into boot camp out of California, and my recruiting station marked me as African American for my for my paperwork. So I show people every once in a while. I print off my entry paperwork, and the block is checked for African American, and I'm just like, well,
there you go.
It's hilarious. No one changed it. They all saw me all the way through. Geez.
All right. You know, hey, whatever.
I mean, I guess I could have been like South African, you know, or something like that, but still.
Hey, that's just,
it was silly.
I mean, being African doesn't necessarily mean, you know, the color of your skin dictates, you know,
yeah,
you're African,
I know,
or whatever, you know?
I was just sitting here thinking about it. I was like, you know how many, you know, Asian people I've met that have like English accents because they're from England, you know, it's just like there's so many people mixed up all over the place. It really doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't. You know, I was literally just like thinking in my head, I was like, Egypt's in Africa. You know, they're, you know, a desert people, you know, tan skin.
You know, I was trying to feel like special. And now I feel crushed. So,
why do you feel crushed?
I don't know. I just feel crushed.
You should.
That being said, I literally know a South African that I work with, and he looks just like me. So, yeah, I'm not special at all.
Well, all right.
Yeah.
All right. So, anyways,
Nigerian though, nice.
Hell yeah, bro. I don't know what else to say about that. It's a revelation to me.
Yeah, you don't have to say nothing. Just we were talking about it. So,
All right. Hey. I have no idea where I'm from other than what my family's told me. But, you know, they say that I'm part Native American, that I have family that's Native American, and then also like Scottish, Irish, German, mainly, or, you know, English, I guess, too. I mean, my last name's King, and, you know, all of our surnames come from, you know, back in the day, you know, from whatever your family did, whatever their part in society was, you know. And I don't know, maybe there's royal blood in me for all, I don't know. I've never looked. I think about it every now and then, but, you know, then I forget about it, and I'm just like, oh, whatever.
I've traced it back on my dad's side. I traced back to the last king of the Scots. So technically I'm Nigerian prince. So
you're the guy that's been emailing me.
Just going to say, keep an eye on your inbox. I might be jumping in DMs. True story though.
Blocked.
All right.
Blocked.
I mean, I do believe that there's Native American in me because I have naturally black hair. Like legit black hair. So I do believe that, you know, I think it was my mom told me that. My mom and dad told me that. I don't know what nation or tribe or whatever, but enough in me that give me naturally black hair. All right, Jake. No, I'm for real. I mean, I don't have enough to really show nowadays, but, you know.
Let's continue, but get the 23andMe or Ancestry.com, whatever, and find out for sure. you don't have to speculate anymore. You could just know.
Yeah, but that costs money, you know, and I can spend money on other things.
I'll send you both something, and you can spit into a little vial and send it off, and then find out exactly who you are and be like, wow, I'm exactly what I thought.
They use that DNA to make clones of you.
I was just gonna say, just sketched me out. That's why I don't want to do it anymore.
Then they have your DNA forever, Jake.
Oh well.
You remember Star Wars, the clone army?
They don't want me. I'm too lazy.
Nope. Oh, anyways.
Okie dokie.
So now that we've talked about the first origins of the Kraken and later tales told from other cultures around the world. Let's get into some science and fact. That's my one of my favorite parts about all this all of these tales, that there is a lot that is based in fact, or at least we can now say was based in fact. So scientists, archaeologists, and literary scholars alike believe these early sailors really did see a giant creature that terrified them, and that the Kraken from tales of old was most likely a giant squid, which can grow up to 46 feet long and weigh over 600 pounds, with some scientists estimating that the largest of these creatures can reach up to 60 feet in length and weigh up to 1,000 pounds. Now, I don't know about you, but I mean, 60 feet, that's freaking huge. You know, I mean, if I came across something like that in the ocean today, I would definitely poo my pants.
Just imagine 100%. Like a semi truck with the trailer. That's
yeah,
roughly
like
a little bit over, but yeah, roughly about 60 feet there, yeah, which is
that's
huge.
Big. Yeah, like I was literally going to say, to put that in perspective, that's longer than a school bus, you know, and that's pretty nuts. Now, it's hard to really say if there ever was a giant squid large enough to take down whole ships or not, because even to this day, they remain extremely elusive, and to the point that they were first filmed in their natural habitat in 2012, which wasn't that long ago, and you know, in the grand scheme of human history. But the very first time they were ever caught on video at all was in 2006, you know, and that was one that was at on the surface of the ocean, which scientists believe that when we've seen them, you know, in that shallow of water, is due to them either being sick, injured, or something like that. So the way they act or whatever may not be how they, you know, their actual temperament and their native, you know, depth, I guess, natural depth, natural habitat. Like I said, that wasn't that long ago in the grand scheme of human history. And before that, the only evidence that even existed or even proved that they existed was washed up, bloated bodies, you know, found on the shores. You know, I remember reading about one that washed up in St. Augustine, you know, and at the time, nobody knew what the hell it was. It was just like, what is this giant blob?
Calamari.
what is this massive rotting blob, like what the hell is this, like, you know, I imagine people's imaginations were just going nuts with what it could have been. But from what we know of giant squids today, it's easy to see why sailors would have found them terrifying. Imagine being out to sea and to look down at the water and find a creature with 8 arms, 2 even longer feeding tentacles coming off their body, which is called the mantle, has been recorded to be over 7 feet long by themselves. So that by itself is already larger than any man, except for the few exceptions, and, you know, basketball players and whatnot.
Giants. Yeah.
Giants.
Nephilim.
Giants.
The giants.
Bring it all back to giants. With the body itself being 7 feet long, that's massive. And then 2 eyes as large as dinner plates, which, you know, they have the largest eyes in the entire animal kingdom. You know, they've been recorded up to 1 foot in diameter. Like, that's nuts. But it makes sense when you take into account their natural habitat is way down deep, you know, where there's hardly any light at all. And so their eyes are much bigger to allow them to take in as much light as possible to see their prey, to be able to hunt. And to me, it's just extremely fascinating that such a creature exists. And in the modern day, we know hardly anything about them. But one thing we do know is that the main predator to the giant squid is the sperm whale, which by itself has fantastic tales. You know, the most well-known being Moby Dick, which I read as a kid. And it was written in Old English, and it was nearly impossible to read. I had to use a lot of context clues to understand what the hell I was reading, you know, because it didn't make a whole lot of sense. But sperm whales by themselves are the largest of the toothed whales and the largest toothed predator in the world, with males averaging 52 feet in length, and some having been recorded being up to 68 feet in length. And how do we know that this is the natural predator to the giant squid? Well, because we found their remains in the stomach of sperm whales, and even giant sucker scars in the whale's skin, which to me is like gnarly as hell, like, but like totally like, I don't know, just badass at the same time. Like that's sick. You know, there's lots of animals, seafaring animals, I should say, that bear the scars of contact with other animals or even humans, you know, from manatees with prop scars on their back to, you know, sharks that, you know, there's been sharks that are like missing parts of their body from, you know, fights with other sharks or other larger predators. Who knows? These scars on the sperm whales, just it can only mean that they've come into contact with one another. And the giant squid is one of the main prey for sperm whales. It's not to say that giant squids are going after sperm whales either, but I mean, if it's being attacked by a giant whale, of course it's going to try to defend itself, because, you know, who wants to be eaten? You know, but I like to imagine what that would be like, you know, being something like straight out of 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, you know, like such a great story. And it's one of the many reasons I love the ocean, books and stuff like that.
Maybe that's why it attacked these ships, because it looked like a sperm whale. And it's like, oh, that fucker's coming to get me. I better get it first.
Yeah.
There you go. I just solved the problem.
It's a very real possibility. I mean, most shark attacks, you know, happen with surfers, which from down below, looking up, a surfer on a surfboard looks like a seal, you know? So it could be as easy, you know, easily explained as being a mistake of mistaken identity. I don't know. It's a good question, but we don't know enough about them to really say for sure 100% one way or the other.
Throw some longboats out there and see if those instincts kick in. Let's do this. Science.
Experiment time.
I mean, there's literally at any given point, any given time, thousands of ships out to sea, big and small, I would say. I mean, and still, there's still, you know, stories reported to this day of strange things seen at sea, you know, so who's to say that it's still not happening? It's up for each one of us to decide on our own.
Boats go missing a lot in the ocean. Mm-hmm. So who knows?
All those earth farts. Anyone who's listening to the Bermuda Triangle will know that there's massive methane bubbles that are released from the crust of the earth, and then they capsize ships because they pop underneath them. Yeah. Earth farts.
Yep.
It's a good description. I wonder what they smell like.
Whatever methane smells like, I suppose. Farts.
Jeez Louise.
Your last words are blaming the person next to you for ripping a massive fart, then you fall into a 1,000-foot chasm because the bubble pops underneath you.
Whoever smelt it, dealt it.
You said the rhyme, you did the...
That's right.
They're probably laughing before they drowned.
Then they're like, oh, shit! Could you imagine that? A colossal squid coming after you? I was just like... Because you said that they have scars on the sides of whales, and I'm sitting here thinking, I was just like, oh yeah, they've got like teeth on their tentacles. And so I like looked them up, and on the suckers they have these serrated edges and stuff. They look like saw blades, and then on the very tips of their like the pointy ends of their tentacles, they have these hooks all over it on the suckers too. So basically, they just grab and drag. Could you imagine, like, whether it was back then or today, who cares? But, you know, say you fall off an aircraft carrier, and then There you are, waiting for the search and rescue team to come pick you up. But instead of them coming to get you, you get wrapped around your body by suckers with claws and teeth and just pulled into the depths. See?
I don't honestly don't know about that. You know,
let's all go surfing.
To me, more terrifying than the tentacles themselves is the beak. And behind the beak is a mouth with teeth. Also, you know, I don't want to imagine that. You know, they have the eight arms and then two extra tentacles that are longer than their eight arms, you know, that can shoot out and basically grab you and just bring you in. And then all you see is this giant gaping beak, you know, like, hell no. Hell no. Hell to no, no. You know?
Nope.
No, thank you. I don't want to imagine. I mean, I'd love to see one, but like maybe in like a museum or something, you know? I mean, I believe in the UK, I think it's in the UK, they have a preserved body of one. You know, and it's like full length, or at least the length of the what's preserved of the body, and it's like 46 feet long, something like that, or 43 feet long. You know, and I'd love to just be able to see that in person, because it's one thing for, you know, someone to tell you, oh yeah, this is 46 feet long, but then to see it in person gives it, you know, where you can actually see and feel its scale in person, like that's a whole another thing by itself.
That's a big dang squid.
That's a huge squid. But that's about all the info I have. I mean, like I said earlier in the beginning of the episode, there's a lot of info, but there's also not a lot, you know, because, you know, like I said, there's still a ton that we don't know about the giant squid. And, you know, it's still, you know, it's an elusive creature that sightings of it are very rare. You know, first ever time being videoed was 2006. First time ever being videoed in its natural habitat was 2012. It's pretty crazy, but you know, it was first talked about all the way back in the first century. It's crazy. And it seems, you know, that it's remained unchanged for the most part from how it was described back then, those legends and myths. I hope that we find out more about it in the future. I would love to know more about it. It's a fascinating creature. The ocean itself is just mind-bogglingly awesome. And yeah, I mean, what do you guys think, you know, knowing that it's, you know, miss or most likely based on the giant squid?
I mean, it makes sense. And I guess just for like my final opinion on it, it's actually the same as when I started, to be honest. I still fully believe that there are things in the ocean that we just don't know about. Probably big things too. Massive things. Maybe even aliens. I don't know. But... you know, the idea that it gets carried on generation to generation, culture to culture. It's just, you know, I'm sure that there's something down there. Could be a giant squid. And if they've seen some that are, you know, nearly 50 feet and they estimate, oh, it could get up to 70, 80 feet, maybe go back 1,000 years. How do we know there wasn't one that was 500 feet, you know?
I'm glad you brought that up, because I was thinking earlier when we were talking about it, you know, the first tales about this were, you know, how many thousand years ago, you know, and we talked about this in the Giants episode. I mentioned that, you know, thousands of years ago, the oxygen content of the atmosphere was much greater than it is now, which allowed creatures to be way bigger than they are now. Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact there was, you know, bugs and insects as big as, you know, Volkswagen Beetles and whatnot.
Like, which we know, terrifying.
Yeah, which is crazy. So if it could be insects and, you know, other creatures being this large, why not sea creatures as well. I mean, we already know of, you know, the Megalodon being this massive predator back, you know, back then. But it's not around today because it's, well, at least we think it's not around today. We'll have to get into that later on. Foreshadowing. Yes. You know, we'll definitely going to get into that. But that in itself is another extremely fascinating thing, that there was these creatures that were that large. And, I was recently a few months, well, I guess it was back in April. I was at the, Museum of Natural History in DC, and they had like a full scale, like Megalodon like thing in there. And I was just like, I walked around the corner, not expecting to see it. And I was just like, oh shit. You know,
cool.
Like, it's just crazy. Like damn, like a real life Jaws. But yeah.
Yeah, I think they're definitely real. I'm team Kraken.
Hell yeah. Cheers to that, bro.
Hashtag Kraken is real.
I'm also team Kraken, but the animal, not the drink. I do not partake Nomo. but I yeah, I mean I'd like it to be, you know, in my heart, I'd like it to be some crazy looking animal, right? Like one thing that we go back on quite a bit is the platypus, right? Or the bat that it's a mammal that uses echolocation, or the platypus because it's, you know, a mammal that lays eggs and it's got, you know, toxic spurs on it and all kinds of wild stuff. And truth be told, we have way more animals than just that are seemingly mixtures of different things. So really, when it comes to like the likelihood that a shark with tentacle, you know, tentacle legs would exist, I mean, it sounds crazy, but is it really all that crazy?
I mean, whales used to have legs.
I mean, it's true. and they still will at some point. They'll come for us. But I think that the jury's out on that one, on whether or not it's like, you know, some of the more crazy legends. But I mean, we know the colossal squid exists. So sure. And I agree with what, you know, both, you know, Wes and Jeff, but what you were saying is that, you know, why couldn't there have been one that was 500 feet long? And all we have now are the ones that are smaller, that are, you know, whatever. And it could be because of the oxygen content. And that could have played a part in, you know, the availability of food, right? That the smaller ones can succeed where the bigger ones die out. And maybe they're two different species. I don't know, you know, because we have normal squid and then we have colossal squid. And why couldn't we have super duper colossal squid, right? Or something like that. So, super duper massive colossal squid. So, yeah, I definitely believe that there was probably more truth to those legends than we give them credit for, that they weren't just another culture. Or another group of cultures, rather, you know, looking at what you first said about all these different areas that at the same time had the same sort of a, you know, a sighting or a legend surrounding it, that they weren't just making stuff up and saying, oh my gosh, they were so big. You know, it could have been because of the ship sizes, and it could very well have been because these things were freaking massive, right? And now maybe we just have the leftovers or the ones that haven't died out all the way. Who knows? But yeah, definitely like to learn more about them as time continues and, you know, these elusive creatures get found out more about. I honestly think that our space exploration is a gigantic waste of funding, because I would much rather know what's in all the deep, dark cracks of, you know, the Earth and inside of the water than I would about some stupid moon rocks. I really could care less, right?
And so, what if there's space squid, man?
The space squid. If you watch Neebs, it's the space mammoth. But Jeremy will get that. But yeah. I mean, I'm on board. I like it. I like the conversation and the topic. I think that it's probably one of the more plausible things that we've talked about in a while. I mean, Bigfoot, 100%. We all seem to kind of agree on it. You know, we try to not be an echo chamber, but when it really comes to things that are like very suited, you know, or put in reality, like a scientific discovery, that who knows, this could be very well the definition of cryptozoology, is an animal that's unknown to science, but, you know, there's legends about it and stuff. And then scientists discover it, like in 2012, by accident, they see a colossal squid on a camera underwater. So, yeah, there you go. Cryptozoology.
It's a great way to sum it up. Yeah, for sure.
I like it. Yeah, no, I like the idea that there was this 500-foot creature just destroying ships, because, like, that's just awesome to me.
Killing all the people.
But, yeah.
Eat them all.
It's so hyped up and so fantastical. It's too good to be true, almost, you know? So the idea of, I like the idea of, like I said, these boats weren't that big. So, like I said earlier, this totally got flipped upside down for me. These boats weren't that big. So these giant squids, which have always been around for all we know, have just been carrying on with their lives, seeing this boat that looks like a sperm whale and is like, that guy's coming for me. I gotta get him before he gets me. He takes down the ship, calls it a day. That's the end of it. The squid's safe. We have a Kraken story from the one lone survivor, or the one guy who saw it, or whatever the case may be. I like the fantastical story, but it makes me feel better knowing more of a realistic side. It makes me feel better about the ocean.
Yeah, it's definitely a scarier thing to think about, knowing that it's based on a real creature that we know exists to this day.
Could you imagine how many people that would feed? Like, I'll go eat calamari, and it'll be like these little tiny squids and stuff, yeah. And like a little... Like, well, they're not little, but the suckers and stuff, that would feed a lot of dang people. I mean, maybe we should, you know, kind of pursue finding out more about the giant squid by, I don't know, hunting them.
That may be why they're so rare now. They may have just been eaten.
Well, yeah. Let's get the rest of them.
You know,
I mean, almost every restaurant I go to nowadays seems to have calamari as an appetizer.
Well, I just mean over the course of the last, whatever, 10,000 years, you know, we could have eaten them off just like we did. We didn't even eat buffalo. We just fucking hunted them for the hides, but same thing.
In the wings. I'm just kidding.
In the wings.
Settler sea cows were one of those creatures that were said to be a mermaid, but they went extinct in the, I think it was the 1920s, because we just hunted them. They looked like manatees, basically.
Huh. Sea cows, huh?
Yeah.
Right. Were they smaller manatees? Were they skinny? Long,
flowing
hair? I
don't know, but it was one of those creatures that was mistaken for a mermaid.
So maybe don't hunt them. Okay, fine.
Can't hunt what you can't find.
That's right. 95% of the ocean's still left over. There's plenty of them. Let's go back to hunting them. I'm sure of it.
Yeah.
We'll find something else. It's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good episode, Wes.
Well, thank you. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is something that when I rejoined the podcast, and, you know, you and Jeremy were talking to me about, you know, writing our own episodes or whatever. Mm-hmm. And first thing that popped in my mind about covering was the Kraken. Like, I don't know. That's just, it'll always stick with me. Just something that I would love to see, something like that. You know, I mean, being on deployment on an aircraft carrier, I've seen lots of crazy things out to sea, you know, been through crazy typhoons and storms and whatnot. You know, waves and swells big enough to damage even an aircraft carrier, to seeing the ocean literally as smooth as glass, not a single ripple, wrinkle, anything, like literally just perfectly smooth for as far as you can see. Like, that's literally one of the craziest things I've ever seen in my life. And I'll never forget seeing that. You know, and that's just on the surface. To think, you know, we talk about the oceans cover 70% of the planet, right? But I think another thing we don't really consider is that, you know, the ocean isn't just this flat thing. It has depth to it, and there's, you know, all this unseen terrain throughout. Mm-hmm. And sure, we've mapped out, you know, a lot of that undersea terrain and whatnot, but we don't really know what's down there and that unknown portion of it will continue to fascinate me until the day I die, I'm sure.
I mean, you can think about, like, I think the biggest mountain range in the world is under the ocean somewhere.
Yeah, there's...
Right, so think about, like, a mountain range, and think about all the creatures that live in a mountain range. Not just one mountain, like a whole range of mountains. I mean, you got bears and lions and all kinds of stuff, right? And there's caves that things can live in. So now think about the biggest mountain range ever is underwater, and, like, what could be living there.
There's literally underwater rivers of brine in the oceans, you know, which is crazy. You know, there's these creatures that literally have iron, like, they're made partially of iron to be able to survive in these extreme conditions near thermal, geothermal vents under, you know, on the bottom of the ocean. It's just crazy. There's so much, there's definitely way more.
You've got creatures like eels who can go between fresh water and salt water too. Like, that's baffling to me.
Well, even if you could sonar the whole bottom, which I think we've done a lot of, but, you know, you could sonar the whole bottom of the ocean and you'd be like, yeah, there's a mountain range there. But unless you know where the cave entrance is, and that cave entrance could lead into a cave system that's miles long, just like on the surface, but it's two miles under the ocean.
As above, so below.
Who knows what lives in there? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, for sure. I don't know if any of you guys have heard of this game, but it's called Subnautica. It gives me submechaphobia, I think it's called. It's fear of, like, the
deep ocean.
The deep ocean, yeah. Like, creeps me the hell out playing that game. Like, it's crazy.
Love watching those videos of, like, we're just going to use the Titanic as an example. I love watching videos of the Titanic, and you see, like, the animals in the background, but, like, just the whole idea of all of that, just looking beyond what's right in front of you there, just into the depths of the ocean. That's terrifying. Mm-hmm. Like, anything could come at you, but it makes me so uncomfortable, but it's so fascinating to watch. I love it.
Oh yeah.
It's weird, but I love it.
I mean, there's literally the stuff of nightmares down there. I mean, hell.
Oh, yeah.
Anglerfish.
Guardians of the nightmare realm.
Pure, pure nightmare fuel. there's way more that we're going to be able to cover about the ocean, probably more than we'll ever be able to cover on this podcast, you know, while we're still alive. I'm sure there's going to be new discoveries and stuff in the coming years, things that are just wild and crazy, you know, that no one could have ever imagined existing. And I look forward to that. I look forward to hearing about these things.
Next up, the abyss.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of that, what is the next episode?
Foreshadowing.
Do we just not tell the listeners anymore? Is that a thing?
Well, it's changed so much. Well, I mean, we could say what the next episode is, but next thing you know, it's going to be pushed back 3 months.
Yeah.
So it's just easier to just not tell them anything.
Fair enough.
Stay tuned to find out what we cover next.
Go ahead, the suspense is probably just better anyways. So
next Friday, you'll find out what's going to be covered next.
And it's going to be a surprise to all of us.
That's right. Alrighty, this has been another episode of the Infinite Rabbit Hole. Thank you so much for joining us. Please check out our webpage, infiniterabbithole.com. You'll find links to all of our platforms, social medias. Join us on our Facebook group. There's a lot of fun going on there. Just join up. You can post all kinds of stuff. Just please, nothing political. But yeah, come hang out with us. Come
leave us a voicemail.
Oh, please leave us a voicemail. We have all these people that
love the voicemails.
Constantly hit us up at stuff, but we want voicemails so we can play your beautiful voice over the next available episode. Like, even if you have a business, and you want to promote it, free advertising. This podcast rakes in about 300 listens to 600 listens, audio only, and then our video version gets about 1K plus every single time. So if you have a small business that you want to broadcast and you want free advertising, leave us a voicemail. Say, hey, I'm Joe from whatever podcast, or I'm, you know, Stacy, and I own X, Y, and Z business, and you're listening to Infinite Rabbit Hole, and we will put that on the next available episode, and we'll cycle it through, so you'll hear it a few times. But yeah, please come hang out with us. Hit us up on our website. There you can find all your Infinite Rabbit Hole merch. Kenzar is wearing one of our shirts, and so am I. It's Probin' Time, and she's wearing Bigfoot's Favorite Podcast. But thank you for joining us down this path of the Infinite Rabbit Hole, and we will see you next time. Bye.
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 Bye.